When we take a look at the story of the Cheder Egel in Parsha Kitisa, we find the following. Aaron saw and built an altar before him. He called out and set a festival for Hashem. Tomorrow, they rose up early. They brought peace offerings, elevation offerings. They set to eat and drink, and they got up to revel. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Lech Reh, go descend, for your people that you brought up from Egypt have become corrupt. They have strayed quickly from the way they have commanded them. They have made themselves a molten calf, prostrated themselves to it, sacrificed to it. And they said, this is your God, O Israel, which you brought up from the land of Egypt. Hashem said to Moshe, I've seen this people. Behold, they're a stiff-necked people. It's time to destroy them. And Moshe Rabbeinu davened and pleaded, and Hashem, we then pick up in B, Hashem reconsidered regarding the evil that he declared he would do to his people. Moshe turned and descended from the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. Tablets inscribed on both their sides. They were inscribed on one side and the other. The tablets were God's handiwork, and the script was the script of God engraved, Haruta Leluchot, on the tablets. Yeshua heard the sound of the people and shouting. He said to Moshe, a sound of battles in the camp. He said, not a sound of shouting strength, nor a sound of shouting weakness. A sound of distress do I hear. And here's the key pasuk. It happened as he drew near the camp and saw the calf and the dances that Moshe's anger flared up. He threw down the tablets from his hands and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf that they made, burned it in fire, and the rest is history. So the question that is asked by the Mefarshim, the Ruach Eliyahu, Rav Svei Zatzal, source number 3, brings the Yerushalmi, that these luchos were ones that Kivyochol Moshe Rabbeinu grabbed from the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring it down to earth. And obviously, if he's going to bring it down to earth, it would only make sense that he would actually give it to the people. Im zot tzarich adayin lavin et dato shel Moshe Rabbeinu mi karam makasavar ubasof makasavar. You see, Hashem told him that they worshipped the golden calf. It wasn't like news to him. Like, what was Moshe Rabbeinu originally thinking? And what was he thinking once he saw the golden calf? Like, why did he even bring the luchos down? He should have just said, you know what, Hashem, they're not deserving of it. Keep it up in heaven. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's, as if we can ask, mindset in bringing it down? And then suddenly when he sees the egel, he says, forget it, and he shatters it. I will make mention that Rav Seretzkin and Megid Yosef in source number 5 offers like 6 or 7 different approaches to what exactly happened or what are possibilities. The first and the second we are going to focus in on as this year. So let's skip Aleph and Bet. Gimel, when he saw the Hololos, the Kalus Rosh, he saw the lightheadedness, he knew there'd be no hope to give them Mussar. Dalet, which is circle, we learn from here that you can't make a judgment unless you've seen something yourself. Seeing is believing. The Rashbam in Hay, when he saw the egel, he became weak. And therefore, again, the idea of you could hear something, but actually seeing it had that effect on him. Vav, the luchos needed to come down to this earth. Even their broken ones were found in the Aron. It's part of our Torah down here. The Ibn Ezra writes that it had to be in front of all the people, the breaking, not just, you know, leaving it up there, but to lizazea et ta'am, to cause the people to be shaken up. And these were different approaches of why Moshe Rabbeinu had to actually only responded when he came down, and not originally, as we would have thought, that either not bringing them down, or as soon as he comes down, to shatter them, right where Yeshua was, but to mamish wait till he saw it, and then shatter it, there's obviously something behind it. And that something behind it, which we just made mention, a few ideas, is going to be our mindset for today. We're going to look at this on 2 levels, and the second level, we're going to have 3 parts. The first level, which is classic among the Mefarshim, is really based on the Sforno. The Sforno in Hebrew is found in source number 6. The Sforno in English is found on the next page, 6b. Let's look at the English. And he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moshe's anger was kindled. When he saw they were happy in their disgrace, similar to when do you do evil, then you rejoice, this angered him, and he despaired that he'd be able to repair the crooked in a manner they would return to their perfection, to their tmimus, and be worthy to receive those tablets. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what, there's always hope for tshuva. You know, give the people a chance. But when he saw that they were rejoicing in their sin, he said, it's too late. So what did he originally think? He thought, they sinned. Okay, it happens. People needed a leader. I understand. They were desperate. I understand this. But when he saw the reaction to this and the rejoicing and the parting, he said, there's no hope now. There's no recourse for tshuva. And this is why he brought the broke the luchos. Ella heim gam smechim bekilkul shasu rasvei. That's Psalm 7. They're rejoicing in this. As he ja'esh melech ziril tam l'madrega kodemet. And Rasvei says, in terms of our lives, you know what? We are confronted by nisyonos, by challenges at all different parts of our lives. You walk out the street. You know what, my friends? You don't have to walk out on the street. You just walk into what you see. I just got off the phone with a friend of mine who was telling me that her 11, 12-year-old boy came home and said to his father, I saw something I shouldn't have seen. And what it was, they haven't been able to piece together exactly what it was, but the boy came home very shaken. Now, it could have been, he's a very sheltered boy. It could have been a Harry Potter movie, and it had girls in it who weren't sneers. I mean, who knows? We don't have to go too far. Right, again, that might be an innocuous example. But everyone, where they're holding, you don't have to go too far, and we see things that really shake us up. Wherein the boy couldn't go to sleep at night. It really was something that really shook him to his core. And we have to realize that these things do happen to us, but we can come back to our tmimus, we can come back to our level. However, if you're merutzeh ma'amatzav shebo hu nimshach acharei rechov, if you're happy with this, and this is where you want to be, unlike the boy's reaction, but wow, I saw something amazing, this is great, then it's going to be much harder to come back to where we originally are. And that's how Rav Volkin Zatzal explains in source number 8. The mecholos, the dancing, was an indication of bilbul hadas, a confusion where they lost the clarity of what they were doing. And once you don't have clarity, once the clarity is lost, then it's going to be much harder to regroup and bring people back together. Shenevda datam legamrei, v'zeh me'ikrei toras ha'musar, li'ashev et daito shel adam, v'leitzonus hi heres, shemabed kol ha'lekach kochel katova. Leitzanos, mockery, making fun of, not taking things seriously, that is what undermines our avodas Hashem. What Musar tries to do, what our learning has to do, is to create a yishav adas, to create a correct approach. Who am I? Where am I? Where am I going? How am I going to get there? And that's that seriousness, which is an important ingredient in our avodas Hashem. Let's try to develop this idea of why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos only then? Why didn't he break them as soon as he got down the mountain, or not even take them down in the first place? Because he really believed that the people could do tshuva. What changed his mind? When he saw them rejoicing, when he saw that there was no remorse, that they were enjoying the sin, that was the problem. And there's a beautiful piece of Rav Shor in Alekach Valibov that takes these ideas and develops this one stage further relevant for our lives. Let's learn together. There's a Gemara in Erevin based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Hadudaim Natnu Reach. These flowers gave off a beautiful fragrance. The Medrash there says, Elu Bachurei Yisrael Shelo Tamu Tamchei. These are the youngsters, the children of Israel who have never tasted a sin. So who are these people that never tasted a sin? I'd like to meet them as well. Like, does such a thing exist? So he quotes here in the underline from the Beis Yisrael from Gur, who says, Shakavanahi, Sha'af im chas v'shalom chotim. No, these people have sinned. Aval einam margishim hatam b'sharachei. When they sin, they don't really have a geshmak in their sin. Keinam yecholim lasod hachet v'largish kol hatam b'yasiyato. They don't get a full enjoyment from the sin. Why? *9 Kilibam nokfam, because they have a conscience. And there's part of them that said, I really shouldn't be doing this. Veinam yecholim lasod hachet b'shleimus. Therefore, albeit they sin, it's not a complete sin. Because there is that voice in their head that says, this isn't so good. And therefore, that voice doesn't allow them to really fully appreciate the act of the sin itself. Ki otzrim et atzman, umitgabrim al yitzram, afilu b'mashu l'chvod yitzram. Even if it's a small amount, even if it's a small aspect, but they hold themselves back knowing that this isn't appropriate in the Ribbono Shel Olam's eyes. And he describes that if we had to give an imagery of this mindset of always remembering Hashem and therefore can't fully enjoy a sin, he said it would be what's found later in our parsha of Kitisa, when Moshe Rabbeinu asked to see an imagery of the face of Hashem, and Hashem says, you can't see my face, you can only see my back. V'ra'ita racharai upanai lo yaru. Chazal say, kesher shel tfilin heralo. Very famous Chazal. Kivyachol Hashem, this is obviously imagery, not literal, showed Moshe Rabbeinu the knot of tefillin in the back of the head. What does this mean? So he explains, based on the Chasam Sofer, Ki kesher shel tefillin hi macharei hamoach, the knot of tefillin is at the back of the brain, Sheshamu makom hazikaron, the place of memory, because after ki lachar shadam kvar ino ro'et hatzura lefanav, af apiken adayin chakut b'acharei hamoach liyot la'adam luzikaron. Even if I don't see the Ribbono Shel Olam in front of me, of Shivisi Hashem l'negdi tamid, in the back of my head, in the back of my mind, I remember that there's Ribbono Shel Olam there. I remember the Hashem's presence. V'inyan hakesha shel tefillin ba'osa makom areza. Because everyone from Klal Yisrael has in the depth of their conscience the remembrance of Hashem, and that never leaves. That's the kesher shel kayama. That is a knot that is continuous, and that's our relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam, which is a davar nitri, which is something that is eternal. And we know that the knot of the tefillin of Klal Yisrael is about the Shema, remembering Hashem. And the Nad Kivyocho, what's found in Hashem's tefillin, is Mika Amcha Yisrael, remembering us. And that's the continuous aspect where we are never off Kivyocho, as if, right? Hashem's radar, and we are never off Hashem's radar, and Hashem is never off our radar. With this we can appreciate, on a little bit of a deeper level, the Sefer Aschut, he brings down from the Mekubalim, that what else is found in that back of the neck? That's right, the luz bone. That bone which they say is nourished from the food that we eat in Malava Malka. And that bone is the bone from which resurrection is going to come. And it's all one idea. The idea of being continuously connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam is the idea of Tchias HaMeitim, that we never will completely die. We will all come back to life. And that even when a Jew sins and is disconnected from Hashem, he still has a connection with Hashem. There's always that deeper connection that we always have to keep in mind. Now, having said this, let's move to the third page. V'nei kevan shebnei Yisrael tamid k'shurim el Hashem yiparach b'pnimiyot libam. L'chein heim tamid yecholim lasot tshuva v'l'takein ma shivtu b'chetam. That's why we can always do tshuva, because we're always connected. There's always a part of us that's connected. Omnam ita b'shem Shmuel. However, it is written in the Shem Shmuel and Parshat Ekev. Shekoach ha-simcha hu davar shemakiv kol chalkei ha-nefesh. Simcha has this aspect of being all-inclusive of all different parts of a person's soul. Va'ideya simcha b'shara siyas haveira niklat haveira chas v'shom b'chola nefesh kula. So what we're saying is that there's always that point of connection. The one thing which is probably the most dangerous for any aveira that we do is to feel simcha in doing this. Because simcha is something that surrounds the entirety of a person. Kare ein kan anocha b'shara siyas aveira shiba mitzad chelek atov shol yifkam. When one does a sin and says, "Ay, I shouldn't have done that. I feel terrible," right? And we're feeling guilty and remorse the whole day, you know, playing it over in our head. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I said that. So there is, that's the connection. That's that part that won't let us go because we feel bad. When a person doesn't feel bad, that was great. You know, let me say it some more. So I've broken that connection. And then you're really experiencing the sin fully. And then you feel that sweetness of the sin. And that's why when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that they were singing and dancing and partying, he said that has completely, they become completely enraptured, and therefore I realize that there's no way that they have that feeling of angst, of anacha, that they're going to do tshuva. And he explains, and this is a gewaldig vort, which brought down in the sermon, he doesn't mention who, the pasuk says, listen to this, gewaldig, tachar asher lo avata Hashem Elokecha b'simcha. Pasuk tells us in Parshas Ki Tavo, you want to know why all these curses are going to befall Klal Yisrael, what terrible thing do Klal Yisrael do? So stuck in the middle of these 98 curses is the pasuk. Because you didn't serve Hashem with joy from everything that Hashem gave you. So that's a little bit intense. Just because I don't have simcha shel mitzvah, that's going to bring all these terrible tragedies. So he says no. Ki halo avadata, the asterisk in 12b, he b'simcha. Different shot. Tachar asher lo avadata was b'simcha. Because the lo avadata, we normally say because you didn't serve Hashem with simcha. Stop. Tachar asher lo avadata. Because when you did the lo avadata, when you did the aveiros, when you didn't serve Hashem, you didn't serve Him. You did the aveiros b'simcha, with joy. That's why we have the problems. Because if you did the sins with a feeling of remorse, then there's always tshuva. But once you've lost that, it's much harder to do tshuva. And obviously, v'nei midat tova merubah shemizan lumedim ad kama gdola ma'ilas of simcha shel mitzvah. If this is an indication of the effects, if you're going to do an aveira with simcha, can you imagine if you do a mitzvah b'simcha? This, and this is why he says that a chassan and kala, wow, we begin off their life with simcha. It's going to infuse their entirety of their whole being, because simcha is such a powerful force. Rabbi Kestenbaum, Omolam Amidos, Masil Shisharim writes that true joy lies in recognizing we have the merit to serve Hashem and be involved in Torah mitzvahs, which are precious and eternal. If a person would find a large sum of money, he would be delighted at how much more delighted he should be when he merits to fulfill even one mitzvah or learn one Torah thought. Sasa nochi elim rasecha kimotzei shalal rav. We have to continually remind ourselves of the privilege presented by each opportunity to mitzvah or learn Torah. By doing so, we'll fill the obligation to serve Hashem with joy. The Orchos Tzadikim in Shaar Simcha says something incredible. Someone who does mitzvahs joyously is rewarded 1,000 times more than a person who does mitzvahs as a burden. To put this into perspective, it means the reward of a person who lays tefillin joyfully one time would be equal to that of another person who lays tefillin mindlessly for 3 years. Wow. You know, I think we've mentioned before the famous personality of Elia Roth, who once went over to a chassid and said to him, who was, you know, getting ready to daven, put on his tefillin, he says, "I'll give you $1,000 if you don't put on tefillin today." So the guy looked at him and says, I'm sorry, it's a mitzvah to put in tefillin. It's not worth, you know, I'm not giving up $1,000. Okay, $10,000. It's not for sale. Okay, $50,000. You got me nuts. I'm going to put on tefillin. So Rav Eliezer said to him, if you're ready to give up $50,000 to put on tefillin, why don't I see that when you put on the tefillin, it's worth $50,000? You're so excited, as if, you know, this is more important than $50,000. And it's a very powerful lesson for us. Why don't we express this joy in doing the mitzvahs that we do? So level number one, my friends, is clear. Mishenichlas adar marvin b'simcha. This is really our mandate. Our mandate is to take that aspect of joy, of relationship, of that kesher shel tefillin, that loose bone, and be able to invest in our siyas of mitzvahs with simcha. And it starts, find one, the Sfarim Sefer of Wolba brings down, that you're somewhat attracted to. Like there's like that energy, like I really enjoy this mitzvah. So invest in that a little bit more, and then allow it to be able to spread to other things. But Mishenichlas Adar Marbi Mesimcha, sometimes we're at loss, like where do I go? You know, what was so, you know, Simcha, so out there. Start something small. Take a mitzvah you enjoy doing. You enjoy Hachnasat Orchim. You enjoy Bikur Cholim. You enjoy davening. You enjoy lighting Shabbos candles. Choose a mitzvah. You have 613 to choose from. And think about it beforehand. Wow, I have the opportunity to do this mitzvah for Hashem. Hinni Muchan Muzumban. And you get excited and get dressed up for it. And you might do a dance afterwards. You know, whatever you want to express that joy and that simcha. That, my friends, is level number one. He saw they weren't be able to do tshuva. Level number two, which we'll look at in three aspects, is a very fascinating medrash. The medrash is found in the Yalkut Shimoni. The medrash says, 15, Ra'ah sheparchak tav ma'alehem v'hishlichan miyado. He, Moshe Rabbeinu, saw the script flew off from the luchos, and so he threw them down from his hands, which some people explain to mean that was like a sign. If the writing is going to fly off, that's an indication that, you know what, they have to be broken. So let's try to understand what this is all about. So let's first of all take a look at it, these flying letters, from the perspective, these letters vis-a-vis the people. These letters, second level, will be vis-a-vis the tablets themselves. And the third level is the first level will be by the egel, the second, the people, and the third, the tablet itself. So let's take a look in source 16. It's very fascinating that the description of, this is Leiv Shalom Rosh Fadron Tzatzal, it's very fascinating that the description of the luchos, how they were made and hewn, and the writing of God, is found right before the Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. What's the placement here doing here? And the answer, he says, is the writing of God was supernatural, and the way they were broken was supernatural. Because after all, how do you break a godly tablet? I mean, like, this isn't like my Corel in my kitchen, which, you know, has a fun time on the floor and just shatters into pieces. This is Lahavdil Elef Alfei Hebdalot. This is the luchos that Hashem gave us. This is the hand of God. Like, what is going on here? How is it possible to even shatter them? So he says, it's obviously something supernatural. But the core idea, and he quotes it from the Ramban, is at the bottom of 16, where he says, Lo nimna Moshe b'chol zemel shaber otam v'chulu ki inyan shizkivu rabotenu sheparach haktav ata b'va'o b'gvul ha'egel b'makom ha'tumah v'ha'chet. And this answers our question straight away. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu break him as soon as he came down? And the answer is because as soon as he came down, they were doing fine. It was only the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually in front of the people, and the luchos itself, as if, were confronting this Avodah Zarah, that when you have Tumah and Chet in the presence of something of such holiness, there's only one recourse, and that is that the letters flew off the tablets, and then the tablets, Moshe Rabbeinu understood, the tablets had to be broken. There was nothing left of the tablets. There was nothing on them. 17, let's continue on the next page, Rav Shradon. Achei noda davar, hinei matzanu pitaron taluma. We've now discovered the secret. What has the ability to break and shatter the handiwork of God? The answer is hatuma v'hachet, impurity and sin. Av shemaseh Hashem lo yishparu mikol achavatot shevaolam, aval yinapsu hei mul hatuma v'chetei hadam. When you put godliness in front of sin, there is no other option. That godliness leaves and the luchos are shattered. Ki ein kol ofen shebaolam shekodesh yitarei b'chol. There is no way that holiness and impurity can be mixed together in the same place. Im nifkashim heim, if you're going to have them meet, miyad parachat hakdusha v'ne'alemet, the holiness is going to quickly move away. This helps us understand the very end of the Chumash, where the Pasuk says, U'lechol ha'yad ha'chazakah, mamash the end of Dvarim. U'lechol ha'mora ha'gadol sh'arsa Moshe l'nei kol Yisrael. We're talking about all the great things that Moshe Rabbeinu did in front of Klal Yisrael. What was the great thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did in front of Klal Yisrael? Rashi tells us, Chazal sh'nas'o libo lishpor ha'luchos le'neihem, that he broke the luchos. Yashikach, that you broke the luchos. That was the great thing Moshe Rabbeinu did. So explains Rav Epstein Zatzal, Shalimud hazeh shalimei Moshe et Yisrael b'shfiras haluchos, harei yalimud ha'yoter narav v'gadol shalimei Moshe Rabbeinu ta'am me'olam. Yes, this was one of the greatest lessons Moshe Rabbeinu could teach the people. By breaking the luchos, he's showing them what ha'chet ligrom, l'ma yachol ha'chet ligrom, to what sin can lead to. Shebekochol lishpor maaseh Elokim, you can actually break the handiwork of Hashem. And you can imagine that this took a lot of omets, a lot of strength of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he goes on to explain, and this is very fascinating, and the honest truth is I never thought about it in this way. Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm paraphrasing now the end of 18. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain. What should have happened? What should have happened is the people suddenly see Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh my gosh, this is who we're looking for. We thought you would die. Wow, they take the ego, they destroy it themselves, they come around Moshe Rabbeinu and they start singing, you know, whatever song you sing for Gedolei Yisrael. That's what makes sense. So shar Moshe, v'nasu pitzchi olam, v'yavo melech ha'kavod. Very befitting for Moshe Rabbeinu. They don't do that. They don't respond. Because, says Rav Shradon, it wasn't that they were missing Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo lo tachlif le Moshe in the asterisk at the end of 18. Chivsu otam ol de'agim. They weren't looking for a replacement of Moshe Rabbeinu. Elo tachlif le shitat Moshe. They're looking for a replacement of the whole world's view of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why when Moshe Rabbeinu saw this, and he saw that these are a people who are not able to accept this aspect of Kedusha, that he saw that he has no other option but to break the luchos. And that's the idea, Minchas Micha, Rav Rebibo echoes this idea. He says, U'kishera'u aluchos et ha'egel, when the luchos saw the egel, the kochos atuma noraim. It's not even about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's about the luchos come in contact, the epitome of Kedusha, with the epitome of tuma. Kedusha has no room to stand. And therefore, it disappeared, and the way he describes it, which is among a lot of the mafarshim, u'mikol makom lo yachlam l'sovlam mipnei kvodam v'naflu miyadav, v'nishberu achar shechafa k'dusha mehem. These were very heavy stones. What enabled Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to carry them down the mountain, these heavy sapphire stones? The answer is they carried themselves, like the Aron Nosei and Dosa. They were very light because they were godly. And in godly terms, there is no weight. There's nothing that's going to carry them down. The moment the godly aspect of them disappeared, then the stones themselves became so extraordinarily heavy that Moshe Rabbeinu had no other option but to drop them. And the dropping of them is what shattered them. So when we talk about why did Moshe Rabbeinu only shatter the luchos now, the answer is he really didn't shatter them. It was a consequence of the letters flying away, which again had nothing to do with him. It had to do with Kedusha, feeling the Tumah. There is no place for both of them to come together. And the Kedusha just left, and the luchos were broken. That's approach one. Approach number two is to understand the luchos in terms of what the luchos were about and their interrelationship with Klal Yisrael. Let's begin with the famous Medrash, which says, when the Pasuk says that the luchos were charut, they were engraved, don't read it as charut, as engraved, but as chayrus, as freedom. The luchos, these tablets, created freedom for Klal Yisrael. Let's explain this. 21. Freedom from the angel of death. Since the Medrash derives from the verse which refers to the first tablets that the people gained freedom from the angel of death, we may draw some connection between the nation's immortality and the tablets. And this is really what he's about to say based on the Orgadayahu. He points out that whenever the sages, after the pronunciation of a biblical phrase for purpose of exposition, it's not their intent to supersede the verse plain meaning. Rather, the sages' exposition based on alternative reading of the verse must be related to and complement the verse simple's intents. So if it's charos aluchos, it's engraved on the tablets, and Chazal are learning charos, that we are free from the angel of death, the two must be somehow connected. Reading charos, charos, engraved freedom, it's not just a play on words, there is an interrelationship in ideas. And he explains, the relationship of the soul to the physical body has been compared by our sages to the relationship of the holy scriptures and the parchment in which they're inscribed. Just as the wording conveys sanctity to a Torah scroll, so too the soul breathes life and sanctity into the human body. The tablets and the engraved commandments in turn may be compared to the body and the soul. Regarding the first tablets, the verse cited by the Medrash states in full, V'aluchos v'asen lukim hema, v'amechta mechtav elukim hu charus aluchos. The tablets were God's handiwork, and the script was the script of God, engraved on the tablets. Since both the script and the stone of the first tablets were the handiwork of God, the brilliant light of the engraved text, the soul of the tablets, was able to suffuse the stone, the physical body of the tablet, from one side to the other. The spiritual aspect of the tablet was infused and suffused into the body. And likewise, the Jewish people at that time in 22 also reached a similar state. In essence, the tablets the nation received mirrored the nation's spiritual standing. Just as the physical tablets became fused with the spiritual writing etched on them, so too the physical bodies of the Jewish people became purified, uniting with their souls. Thus we find that at Mamad Har Sinai, we went back to the level of Adam HaRishon before the sin, and this is the level of being completely free from the angel of death. At the end here, by reaching this lofty spiritual level in which their bodies merge with their souls, the Jewish people achieved immortality. And that is, again, parallel to the script and the stone becoming one. With this in mind, my friends, on the second level, why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos? What does it mean that the letters flew away? So this is a gewaldic piece from the Sfas Siftei Dat quotes. Let's learn together. He brings the medrash that we just mentioned, Charus al aluchos, shebematan aluchos arishonos, hayu adibros charutot b'liban libotam shel Yisrael. So in the first luchos, not only was it engraved on the tablets, simultaneous to that was the engraving on the hearts of the Jews. Ad shaitan Yisrael cheirus b'malach habavet. And that was that tremendous spiritual infusion that our bodies and soul became one, the script and the tablets became one, and we were no longer under the Melech HaMavet, the angel of death. Cheirus min ha-golios, v'cheirus min ha-yitzahara. We were free from all of this. V'nei yish la-vi'inim rotzeh, pasuk lom deyna matzav yisrael b'toshal, matzav bo yudvim charutim aluch libam. Then, why doesn't it... Why is this learned from this idea of freedom, specifically from the way it was graved on the stone? Just tell us this. Why are we learning it from here? And he says here, Lomein Mikanas Sasemes, in the asterisk, Ki Torah Tluya Bachanat B'nei Yisrael Kabbalata. The only way we can get the Torah is if the Jewish people are a kli kibul, a repository ready to accept it. Kefi kama shadvarim charutim aluach libam shel Yisrael, kachem charutim aluach habrit. To the extent that the message of the Ribono Shel Olam, that spiritual message, is engraved on our hearts, to that extent, it's going to be engraved on the stone. V'lachen kasher chotim Yisrael, and therefore it makes sense, the moment the Jewish people sin, parchim ha'osios v'aluchos, v'nimcheda charita, the letters fly away. When the stones not only meet the egel, they meet that tuma, when they meet the Jewish people who are no longer the repository, who are no longer the tablet that was etched and engraved on, where the soul no longer impacts the body, where here they're eating and drinking and reveling in this idolatry, at that moment the body is no longer in sync with the soul, and therefore the writing is no longer in sync with the tablets, and therefore percha, the writing, disappears. HaTorah The Torah is here for us to ignite the world. But that enlightenment is not going to come from a tablet or from the Torah. It's only going to come from us who are living and modeling this aspect. To the extent that we keep the Torah, to that extent, the letters are able to be engraved on the tablets. And when Klai Yisrael sinned, Perchua Otios Ba'avir, they were no longer able to be found in this world. They disappeared. And which is what the Birkas Mordechai said so clearly in 24, that Yisrael and Araisa are Chadu, we are one with the Torah. And if we are not holding where we need to be holding, the Torah has no ability to be holding where it needs to be held. And therefore, it was clear that the luchos had to be broken. We weren't worthy of having those luchos. And this is what the Yemei Ratzon Rav Volba in Source Netzel 25 and 26 explained. Based on the Radvaz, Mechtzah Ben Liao quotes it, that when we draw the luchos, we draw them in a what we call a heart form, the top. When really the luchos, as Chabad draws them, is correct, is a cube form. The luchos were cube. They were not, as you see above, you know, our imagery is in the, at least growing up in shul, the, you know, Ten Commandments. So anytime you draw the luchos, right, little kids, it's always in a, like a heart-shaped form. Why? Because when the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the Torah, he created Lev Tahor Bar Elokim. He created a heart that was ready to receive the Torah. He created it in such a way that the heart had the ability to affect the body, and that would have been immortality, and that would have been what the perfected state of being is. Now that the luchos were broken, now it's katvei maluach libecha. We have to edge out, and that's the second luchos. Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to carve out the stone. That's a calling for all of us, where we have to become those luchos to allow the Torah to be found here. We have to take the initiative. It's only when we say, this is what I want, this is where I want to be, that the Torah is then going to be able to have a place to reside. And this is Rav Shimon Shkopstadzel. Beifus quotes at length. He says, this is the idea of these luchos. The luchos have to be that we have to create the environment and the wherewithal for the Ribbono Shel Olam to have these come down into our lives. Ukefi Godel HaChana V'Achshara 28 in the asterisk, Kein Tehi Kabbalah. To the extent that we prepare ourselves, to the extent that we work on ourselves, that's how we can receive the Torah. Im aluchos sheyachinu yu mekukalim, as yikakulu b'meshach hazman, lo titkayem etzlam haTorah v'Talmudam yishkach. And if we're not able to work on our luchos, and this working on our luchos is a continuous process, it's not a one-time process, then it's never going to last, it's never going to be complete. My friends, on this second level, this is really the message for our lives. The message for our lives is that we have to etch out that stone, that we have to create the desire, the wanting to be able to have the Torah enter into our lives. And we have to have almost that imagery of the luchos being etched to the interrelationship between our body and soul. Let's take a look at this idea in source number 30. Rabbi Roberts, through the prism of Torah, Menachem Sion Rav Zaks, also describes this in 29. He says, they relate that initially when Moshe Rabbeinu was given them, they were light and easy to carry, almost they supported themselves. Although they were made of stone, the fact they were inscribed with a divinely fashioned script made them ethereal and weightless. When, however, these same tablets came face to face with a golden calf, the holy letters flew away from the stone. The Michtav Elohim could not tolerate the unworthy behavior of Klai Israel. As a result, the Luchot HaEvod on their own became too heavy to hold. They slipped from the grasp of Moshe and broke at the foot of the mountain. This tragic episode happened thousands of years ago, but it provides us with a valuable lesson. In a metaphorical sense, every Jew resembles those luchos. We too are composed of two parts, a physical core, referred to as the Afar Min HaAdamah, earth from the ground, and a neshama, a spiritual component, described in Torah with the words, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. This soul is fashioned inside of us like the divine script on those stones. And it penetrates our being me'ever la'ever, through and through, just like the stones went through and through. The Spirit of God has to also penetrate our lives as well. The physical body requires the nourishment of food and drink, without which it cannot function. The soul, however, also needs to be fed. Its sustenance provided by the Torah that we learn, the mitzvot we practice, and the good deeds that we perform. If, therefore, we neglect those duties and do not provide for the neshama, then its vitality will be radically impaired and weakened. This Michtav Elohim, which we are all embossed, cannot endure without a staple diet of ruchnias and Torah food. If starved, it will depart in the same way as the Holy Script left those luchos at the site of the golden calf, and the result will be the same. Just as those tablets became too heavy to hold, so too one's life becomes stressful and a burden. You know, I give this as an example often to my students. I tell them when we moved into this apartment 20-plus years ago, not only did we move into an apartment, we inherited fish from the previous owners. And I asked the girls, how long do you think these fish last? So the answers range between an hour to a day to a week. And I tell the girls, no one really thought that I was able to hold the fish for much longer. And they were right. And I told the girls, do you know why? I said, I'll tell you why. You see, if you have a cat or a dog or some other, animal, pet, when they get hungry, they let you know this. When fish are hungry, they're silent. They don't remind you that I'm hungry. And therefore, if you don't feed them for a few days, then they don't really make it. And I say to my students, don't be a fish. Don't allow that spiritual side of yourself to be silent, that you're never going to nourish it. You have to feel it. You have to feed it. You have to realize that it exists. And he notes here, witness the numerous young people who cannot seem to find any proper satisfaction in their lives. They therefore turn to drugs, drinking, morality, violence, wander off to Eastern gurus or travel the world aimlessly, anything in search of contentment and peace of mind. They do not realize that life without true spiritual content to nourish the soul leaves them with only the dead weight of Aparamina Dhamma. All the riches and material comforts in the world provide no key to happiness unless one knows how to use them correctly. Hence, the number of suicides among the wealthiest life has become a millstone around their neck. Like the tablets bereft the Mikhtam Ulkim. The message is clear. The more we tend the neshama with health-giving Torah mitzvos, the greater will be our sincerity, serenity and inner happiness. We will feel buoyant and fulfilled, eager for each day and for the chance to involve our physical body in the joint partnership of Avodas Hashem. This is a very powerful idea. When we are living a Torah lifestyle, and kiheim chayenu v'arach yameinu, this is what makes us happy. This is what we flourish with. We're dancing through life. We can manage through life. We're able to handle all life stresses in a way that we understand. The Ribbono Shel is carrying me. I'm not carrying it myself. The moment that this is devoid from our lives, then I don't have that spiritual aspect. Then I feel that heaviness. And that heaviness is that body that is not being nourished. And just like when the heavenly aspect of the letters of Hashem were taken away, they weren't able to be fed by Klal Yisrael down here who could hold them, then the tablets became too heavy for Moshe Rabbeinu to hold, and they broke. And that's a description of us. When we become too earthly, when we just focus in our physical aspect of life, it becomes too heavy for us to hold. Not just because we eat so much, it's too heavy to hold us. It's a spiritual aspect. We're not able to hold ourselves. What we need to keep us going is that spiritual momentum. What we need to keep us going is infusing the writing. And part of that, connecting level one and two together, is surrounding ourselves by aspects of Kedusha. The more Tuma that our Luchos sees, the heavier it becomes and the more difficult, and those letters just disappear. And we have to know that it comes at a cost. It comes at a price tag. And that's her understanding. And just to end this idea, Siach Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Bloy, 31 and 32, he points out that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't possibly give us the Torah, because Torah, which is going to be given on the foundation of sin, is not going to be a Torah that lasts. That if you're going to give over something of such great value, you have to make sure the foundations are strong foundations. And here, clearly, both because of the impurity of the ego, and as well as the people themselves were not ready to receive it, there could be no luchos. Now, my friends, we come to our punchline for today. Wow. We are in for a treat that you can't even imagine. This comes from Rav Bernstein, Emanuel Bernstein, Sefer Dimensions in Chumash. Listen to this. I want to go through this whole essay together, and then we'll close with one final idea. He begins by noting, there's source 33, there's an intriguing discussion in the Gemara This is the Gemara in Megillah, the beginning of Megillah, Gemara in Shabbos, regarding the five final letters. So if you take a look at any Pasuk or any Hebrew, you know that we have these N letters. They are not referred to in order of how they come in the alphabet. They have their own word. It's called Manspach. The Mem, the Nun, the Tzadik, the Pei, and the Chaf. All of these are N letters. So you have Mayim, Mem, Yud, Mem. The Mem isn't written as a regular Mem. It's written as a final Mem. And Yayin, wine. Yud, Yud, Nun, Sofit. You don't have a regular Nun. These are letters that are found if you have a Mem, a Nun, a Chaf, a Tzadik, and a Pei. At the end of a word, these letters will be found instead of the normal writing in the middle of the word. The Gemara states that Manspach Sufim Amrum. The letters of Manspach were instituted by the prophets. Huh? To which he asks, a prophet does not have the authority to add an institution to Torah law. Hence, if this is the form of writing these letters is acceptable regarding Torah mitzvah, such as Torah scroll and tefillin, must be part of the Torah. What do you mean it was an institution of the prophets? And further, the second is one of history. We have a tradition that the letter Mem and Samech were engraved in the Luchos, were held in place by a miracle. The idea behind this is that the engraving on the Luchos went all the way through them. Almost all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet have some part which will remain attached to the body of the Luchos, even after the letter had been engraved through the entire thickness of the Luchos. However, the engraved section of the letters Mem and Samech completely surrounds the middle of the letters, leaving that section of stone in the center unattached by anything. In this regard, we have a tradition, the middle section, the letters stayed in the center of the letter with nothing to hold them up. It was a miracle. Well, one of those letters was a Mem, and it wasn't a regular Mem, because a regular Mem has parts of it that attach around it. It was a Mem Sofit. So you have the final Mem in the Luchos. So what do you mean this was something that the prophets of later established? To answer these questions, the Gemara explains its original statement. They were forgotten, and then the prophets subsequently reinstituted. Well, what does that mean? How are letters of the alphabet forgotten? And the way the Gemara says it, Sofim Amarum. Since when are prophets called Sofim? Literally means those who are on the outlook. We have to understand this. So one of the outstanding Torah personalities of the 19th century, Rabbi Eliyahu Gutmacher, explains as follows. We're aware of the idea of Istako Baraiso Varaam. Hashem looked into the Torah and created the world. It's a blueprint. On a more detailed level, this means that the letters alphabet represent the elements of basic spiritual building blocks of the universe, with each letter reflecting a particular force or concept. And we know that's the whole idea of why the Hebrew alphabet is called Lashon HaKodesh. It's called the holy language, because each letter has so much found in the way the letter is scripted and what it means. The classic example is the letter Aleph, which is a diagonal line with a little yud on top and a little yud on the bottom. The diagonal line looks like a Vav. That's the two Yuds and the Vav. Numerical value is 26. And that's the idea of the Aleph representing the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the name of Hashem. However, as we know, as a result of Adam Rishon's sin, the entire world, as well as man's relationship with it, underwent enormous upheaval. Specifically, this impacted in five areas. One, death, which is originally not meant to be. Two, life would now be marked by setbacks and difficulty. Three, earning a livelihood would be difficult. Four, we became more animal-like in our activities. And five, evil was more present in the world and it's hard to be righteous. These five areas are represented by the five letters of Manspach. The Mem represents Misa, death. The Nun represents Nefila, fall, setback. The Kaf, literally means the palm of your hand, which represents Hashem bestowing sustenance. Pei literally means the mouth, representing eating, most basic physical activity, and the tzaddik is related to the word tzaddik, a righteous individual representing a person's ability to attain to righteousness. In light of the above, we'll appreciate that the letters that correspond to these five areas likewise underwent a change as a result of sin. initially, these letters were in the form as we have them at the end of the word. Initially, the N letters were found throughout. There was no little regular mem or regular chaf. These were found throughout the writing. The mem was closed, representing death being closed away. The nun was upright, representing man being vouchsafed from full or setback. The cuff was open and upright, representing receiving Hashem's sustenance. The pay was upright, representing elevated levels of man's physical activity. And the tzaddik was upright, representing man's natural tendency towards righteousness. All of these letters were three of those letters, the cuff, the nun, and the pay sofit, all stands tall. This is where it's at. We feel good. We're in a good place. And the mem being closed off, death is closed off from us. The nun is also a long letter. However, in the wake of Adam's sin in 37, the change in these five areas was likewise reflected in change in these letters. The mem became open, allowing death to enter the world. The nun became stooped over, making man more prone to setback and mishap. The cuff became stooped over, representing the hardship that would be involved in making a living. The pay became stooped over, representing lower stature of man's physical activity. And the study became stooped over, it's hard to be righteous. The crucial point emphasized here is that originally these letters, when the letters were used in their upright form, this was so even in the middle of a word. Conversely, when they shifted to their diminished form, this was even at the end of a word. So either we were talking about all upright or all closed. Now, my friends, we can get to 38. This diminished situation pertained from the time of Adam's sin onward. However, at a critical point in our history, the original letters finally had the opportunity to return to their original form. And when was that? When we came back at Har Sinai to Adam before the sin. They were free of death and hardship. Accordingly, the writing, double squiggly in 38, on the Luchos, was able to be reintroduced, the letter of the Manspach, in their higher form, after having been in hiatus for 2.5 millennia. However, this elevated level was short-lived, for the making of the golden calf precipitated a fall once more, back to the post-sin state. Hence, the writing on the Luchos that Moshe brought down on that occasion was again incompatible with the world in its diminished state. This, says Rav Gutmacher, is the meaning of the Medrash that says that Moshe saw the script flying off the Luchos. The script that flew off was specifically the letters of Manspach, which reflected a level that B'nai Yisrael were no longer on. With this in mind, we return to tradition that indeed the letters Mem and Samech were completely closed. It was the final mem that was found in the Luchos. The second Luchos, which were given after the sin of the Cheta Egel, it says, "And I shall write on the tablets." The writing was like the first, but not the script, the content. The words on the second set of Luchos would be as the same as the first, but the script would be different, with a lower form of Manspach being used to reflect the fallen state of B'nai Yisrael. So for example, when you had the word Kabed et Avicha v'et Imecha, in Kabed, that Chaf was a Chaf Sofit. Imecha, the Mem, was a Mem Sofit. That's how the Luchos looked. But when Klal Yisrael sinned, all of those final letters of Manspach, yep, had to disappear because the Jewish people weren't on that level. And everything reverted back to the broken, to the fallen, at the beginning and at the end. It turns out that the only person who had seen the letters of Manspach was Moshe Rabbeinu himself. It's why the Gemara says the higher form of the letters was forgotten at a certain point. Moshe may have told his disciples who passed on this information. And now, this continued until the time of the Nevi'im, part of whose task was to prophesy regarding the end of days and the future redemption of the Jewish people in the world. As part of this goal, they reintroduced the original form of the Manspach letters, which signify the rectification of the world that will take place at that time. This is the meaning the Gemara says these letters were forgotten and then reinstituted. It's for this reason they instituted that these letters be used at the end of the word specifically, because that is a hint to the end of days and the end of time, where everything's going to revert back to those letters. So the Nevi'im, and that's why they're called Sofim, those who are on the outlook, those who are anticipating the redemption, they are the ones who are able to tap into those forgotten letters. Instead of reinstituting those letters everywhere, because we're not on that level for it. So we have regular mem. The Imecha is a regular mem. But we put them as the final letters to remind us that every time we meet this, we're reminded, Imecha, the Chav Sofi, I look at that En Chav, there will be a day where we'll be able to stand strong. There will be a day that Hashem will nourish us. There will be a day where the mem is closed off and death, Bala, Mavet Lanetzach, Bila and Mavet Lanetzach, death will be completely swallowed up. But we're not there yet. The end letters remind us it's going to come. And this, my friends, is really hinted at. There is one place in Tanakh where you find an end letter in the middle of a word. You got it, my friends. It is chapter 9, Yeshayahu. The prophet foretells of the elevated states of the world in future times. If I'm not mistaken, it's a Haftorah for 2nd day Pesach, 8th day Pesach. We haven't had that in years being here, so I might be wrong. Here it says, Limarbeh HaMisra, and the mem is a closed mem. This is the most unusual occurrence with this verse. Unique, in fact, the entire Tanakh, the letter mem of the word Lamarbe is written as the final mem, even though it's the middle of the word. This, and this is talking about the future times, this prophecy, where toward abundant greatness and boundless peace on the throne of David his kingdom to establish and sustain it through justice and righteousness from now to eternity. This is referring to the future times. We get a taste. Important, the way these letters will be used when the ultimate redemption comes. And we'll end, my friends, with a beautiful insight, the Haras HaTfilah, Rav Uri Weissblum on Tfilah on Shabbos speaks about. The Torah points out that when you take a look at the Shabbos Musaf Davening, you see that it goes backwards in the alphabet. And if you take a look, you'll see the letters, and they go from the Aleph, Bet, all the way back. From Misof El Atchalat, they start with Taf, Tikanta, Shabbat, Ratzita, Korbanoseha. So it begins with Tikanta, the Taf, Shabbat, the Shin, Ratzita, the Resh. It goes from the Taf all the way back to the Aleph, and it is Al Shem HaGeula. And Rav Reisblum shows how each one of these groupings, Taf Shin Resh Kof, each of the groupings going back is connected to a pasuk which is connected to the redemption. That our Musaf, the davening of Shabbos, we're looking forward to the redemption. So he brings at the end here. The end is Vahadag Ba. Those are the final Vav, He, Dal, Gimel, Bet, Aleph, which is a reference to the Livyasan. And then, after that is over, you have the following, Nusach Svar, the following, Mitzinai Nitztavu, the next phrase in the Tfila, Mitzinai Nitztavu Tzivui Po'aleha Kara'ui. From Sinai, we were commanded to do the following. What are the first letters in these phrases? After we've gone through the from Tuf back to Aleph, Mem Nun Tzadik Pei Kaf Matzpach. And that every Shabbos when we daven, we're reminding ourselves of the Geula, not just going back with the letters from Tuf to Aleph, but Misinai Nitztavu Tzivui Pa'aleh Karaui. Misinai, we go back to the letters of the Manspach, and it reminds us, Miss Sinai, those letters which were found at Sinai in their real form in the Luchos, which were lost. Ultimately, when the redemption comes, they will all be brought. And now we understand what were these letters that disappeared, that Moshe Rabbeinu was forced to break the Luchos. The people weren't on the level. They weren't just letters that disappeared. First level because of Tumah, impurity. Second level because the people weren't ready. Third level, the world wasn't ready. The letters weren't ready. This wasn't able to hold these very special letters, which with God's help will be found. These letters of Mansbach very soon in all of our tefillah and all of our Torah.